So what are these five pillars of the FWBO? The five pillars of the FWBO are ideas, practices, institutions, experiment, and imagination. So first, ideas are a pillar of the FWBO. But what is an idea? By idea, I don't mean just a concept. I don't mean simply a mental object. I mean something rather like what we have in mind when we speak of a bright idea. An idea of this kind can usually be expressed in just one or two words. It's something really very simple, and in a sense, though only in a sense, something abstract. But though abstract, in a sense, an idea is at the same time something that is seen as being full of possibilities. It's seen as opening up new vistas, new horizons, and hence, an idea is capable of stimulating people. An idea excites people, it stirs them up. An idea is very often very moving. And more often than not, such an idea moves people to action. It moves them to change things. It moves them to change themselves, to change even the world. People very often are ready even to die for the sake of an idea. Ideas therefore occupy an important place in human life. They occupy an important place in history, and sometimes that it's ideas that change history. In ancient Greece, to refer again to ancient Greece, there was Plato's idea, his great idea of justice, the great idea that dominates his most famous dialogue, The Republic, the idea of justice. Though it's not quite justice in the sense of the English word, but near enough. There's Plotinus's idea of emanation. There's the medieval idea of degree, or as we would say nowadays, of hierarchy, strong echoes of which we find in several well-known passages in Shakespeare. There's the idea connected with that of the chain of being. And coming on to the 18th century, we find quite a number of important ideas. We find the idea of reason. Previously, there wasn't the idea of reason quite in that 18th century sense. And at the same time, in connection with the idea of reason, we of course find the idea of enlightenment, enlightenment with a small e, not in the Buddhist sense of Bodhi, of course. And towards the end of the same century, the 18th century, we find the three interconnected ideas of liberty, equality, and fraternity. These ideas, of course, for a while, convulsed a good part of the world. These ideas of liberty, equality, fraternity. And in the last century, there are still more ideas. There's the idea of progress. There's the idea of evolution. There's the idea of science in the modern sense of the term. And we've grown used to these more recent ideas, and perhaps we no longer find them so very interesting. In the case of one or two of them, perhaps we become rather disillusioned. But once these ideas were new, they were exciting, even they were highly controversial. Nowadays, we have such 20th century ideas as relativity, the unconscious, repression, and so on. I need hardly tell you what part they play in our lives. So in the same way, Buddhism has its ideas. There are ideas that occupy an important place in the history of Buddhism. Ideas that are still important to us as Buddhists today. Take, for instance, the idea of conditionality. The idea which, even when briefly stated, brought about such a tremendous spiritual change, such a tremendous spiritual upheaval in Sariputra, who became one of the Buddha's two chief disciples. An idea which, when he first heard about it, caused him, in fact, even to attain stream entry. The idea of conditionality. And then there's the later Mahayana idea of the perfect mutual interpenetration of all phenomena, of all the phenomena of existence. But I'm sure there's no need for me on an occasion like this and to an audience like this to multiply examples. You'll be sufficiently familiar with these Buddhist ideas. And when Buddhism first came to the West towards the end of the last century, there were certain of its ideas that struck people very forcibly. After all, in the West, we didn't first of all encounter Buddhism as any kind of organization or in any kind of living way. We didn't come into contact with its practices, with its institutions, its festivals, its celebrations. We came into contact, first of all, with its ideas. And some of those struck at least some people very forcibly. There was the idea, for instance, of karma and rebirth. At that time, not much more than 100 years ago, most people in this country, most people in the West, believed that they had only one life on earth, followed by an eternity of either bliss or torment. That was what the vast majority of people believed. But Buddhism taught differently, as you know. Buddhism taught the idea of karma and rebirth, taught the idea of a whole series of lives, both here on earth and in other realms, lives that were governed by an impersonal moral law. And some people, our grandfathers and great-grandfathers, found this idea really an eye-opener. We've got used to it, but to them it was an eye-opener. They found that it placed their lives within an infinitely broader context, gave their lives a different meaning. And then there was another Buddhist idea which struck people very forcibly when they encountered it. The idea of tolerance. The idea that people of different religions were not natural enemies, as it were, that they didn't have to fight each other, even kill each other, that they could live together peacefully, agreeing to disagree. This idea of Buddhism also came as an eye-opener. We're so used nowadays, or many of us are so used to this idea of tolerance, we can't imagine what an eye-opener it was to many people, the majority of people in this country, when they first came in contact with it in connection with Buddhism. Difference of religion, difference of sect, difference of belief in those days could divide families, estrange brother from brother, father from son. You can read instances of this in so many of the works of fiction of the period, the Victorian period. So, ideas occupy an important place in human life. They occupy an important place in history. They occupy an important place in Buddhism. And naturally, therefore, ideas occupy an important place in the FWBO. Ideas are one of the pillars of the FWBO. Now, the ideas that are one of the pillars of the FWBO are of several kinds. There are, of course, the well-known traditional Buddhist ideas, like the idea of conditionality, which I've already mentioned. Then there are those ideas which struck people when Buddhism first came to the West, such as the ideas of karma and rebirth and of tolerance. Perhaps I should also mention in this connection the idea of non-theistic religion. Previously, people had believed that religion was necessarily theistic, For them, in those days, a non-theistic religion was simply a contradiction in terms. And even now, some people in the West who regard themselves as Buddhists have difficulty with the idea of non-theism. Some of them would like to think that somehow, in some way, Buddhism, in some form, believes in God. Finally, among those ideas which are pillars of the FWBO are those ideas which are more or less distinctive of the FWBO. Ideas, we may say, which represent emphases on hitherto comparatively neglected aspects of the Buddha's teaching, or which represent restatements of the Buddha's teaching in more contemporary terms. Among the first, the emphases on neglected aspects of the Buddha's teaching, we may mention the idea of positive conditionality, the idea of going for refuge, and the idea of the spiritual community. And among the second, those which represent restatements of the Buddha's teaching in more contemporary terms, we may mention the idea of the higher evolution and the idea of male friendship. I say male friendship not because I wish to exclude women from the notion of friendship. I say it because male friendship, that is to say, friendship between men, has been rather frowned upon in the West in modern times, and therefore needs to be emphasized in a way that is not necessary or not so necessary in the case of friendship between women. So these ideas, all these different ideas, occupy an important place in the FWBO. Ideas are one of the pillars of the FWBO. Traditional Buddhist ideas, ideas that have been with us since the inception of Buddhism in the West, ideas also that are distinctive to the FWBO. But very often, we do not realize the power of ideas. We don't realize the effect that ideas, just as ideas to begin with, can have on other people. And very often, this is because we've got used to those ideas. It's because we've lost what has been called our beginner's mind. It's important, therefore, that we keep our beginner's mind. Important for our own sake and also for the sake of other people. If we can only keep our beginner's mind, then we will continue to find ideas, perhaps the very ideas that originally attracted us to Buddhism, stimulating and exciting. We shall feel inspired by them. We shall want to communicate them to others, whether by word of mouth or in writing. And sometimes I think that in the FWBO, we do not communicate our ideas sufficiently. Don't communicate them sufficiently to the outside world. Don't communicate them sufficiently to the people we meet. Only too often, I suspect, we're too occupied with self-analysis, too preoccupied with our own subjective mental and emotional states. So I would suggest that there should be a greater emphasis on ideas, a greater emphasis in the FWBO on ideas. I would suggest that we talk more about the idea of conditionality, about the idea of going for refuge, more about the idea of non-theism, more about the idea of male friendship, more, in fact, about all the stimulating and exciting ideas that form one of the pillars of the FWBO.